This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Muggs. Back in February, this show spent a full hour discussing the preservation of notable landmarks for Black history in Cincinnati. Now, two of those landmarks have major updates. The Cincinnati Preservation Association recently announced plans to purchase Glendale's historic Eckstein School, which was constructed to educate the community's Black children pre-integration. The building will be home to the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center after renovation. Meanwhile, former Catholic Church St. Mark's in Evanston took a step toward preservation this month when the Cincinnati Historic Conservation Board approved a local historic landmark designation for the embattled building. The owners of that property have applied for and received a demolition permit for the structure, something the landmark designation could forestall if the Cincinnati Planning Commission and City Council give it final approval. I talked earlier with stakeholders involved in the projects. Here is our recorded conversation. Joining us now to talk about two historic buildings in Cincinnati are Paul Muller. He is the executive director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association. Paul, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
We have Bill Parrish, the executive director of the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center. Bill, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
And J.R. Gentle is Save the Mark Board Vice Chairman. J.R., welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Well, we have talked about both of these properties on this program before separately. Now we're talking about them again. I suppose because it can be characterized that there is good news for those who want to see these properties preserved. So, Paul, is that correct?
Yeah, Michael, it is. And it comes out of a lot of people's work in Evanston and Glendale. And Cincinnati Preservation has just been kind of trying to take the lead from people who've been doing this and bring some of the tools that historic preservation has to offer to sites of Black history.
Well, let's talk about why these buildings are significant. Remind our listeners who may not know or may not remember the previous conversations that we've had about them. Paul, first tell us about St. Mark's Catholic Church in Evanston.
St. Mark's is one of the most iconic buildings in Cincinnati. It was built on the basilica form of architecture, and that's partly because it was Catholic and they were trying to distinguish themselves from the Protestant churches that were being done in the Gothic style. So the architecture has a long story to tell. And then you move to the neighborhood of Evanston, which is trying to repair damage that was caused by 71 when it was sliced the neighborhood. And there's just been an amazing outpouring of community support around the mark. And they tried to buy it. It didn't quite work yet. And there's a actual demolition permit that's been applied for. So Cincinnati Preservation created a landmark designation report at the request of the mark. And that was approved unanimously by the Historic Conservation Board last week.
And we will talk more about what that means and what the significance could be, because it did appear that demolition could have potentially been imminent, may still be, not sure. We'll get some clarification on that. But first, Paul, take us over to Glendale, where we find the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center.
It's another extremely important site of African-American history that was slated to become a retirement center that would have involved demolition of about half of the building. And Cincinnati Preservation Association was alerted to this by the Eckstein supporters. We were able to go in and purchase the building from the developer, and it'll be held by the land bank for a while, and eventually Bill and his group will develop it as the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center.
Am I saying it incorrectly? You said Eckstein. Should I be saying Eckstein?
I defer to Bill on that, but I think it is.
Bill,
Is it either way? It depends on your accent.
All right. Well, I'm from Kentucky, so let's go with that one. And if it's offensive to anyone, let me know, and obviously I will adjust. Let's go to J.R. Gentle, Save the Mark Board Vice Chairman. What is the condition of the vacant St. Mark Catholic Church in Evanston right now?
The current condition is not great. There's a hole in the roof. It's been kind of left. It's boarded up now, not the whole room, but some windows are boarded up now, but it's been vacant for about 5 to 6 years. And during those times, there've been homeless people living in there. the windows have been open to the elements, and that hole has been there, I guess, about 2 years, a little more than 2 years, and it's gotten bigger, and that also lets in the elements. So the sooner we can probably hopefully purchase the property, we can start to restabilize it.
This was a church that was part of the Archdiocese at one point. I understand that it was decommissioned by the Archdiocese in 2010, meaning that it is no longer a Catholic church, of course. So when that church stopped being what it had been, what did that mean for the neighborhood?
I wasn't personally living in Cincinnati at the time, so but from what all accounts, half of our board members have been longtime residents of Evanston. I'm a resident of Evanston now. It wasn't like a shock because the church had gotten smaller and smaller. So one of the reasons they decommissioned it was because they consolidated three churches in the area into one. And so it didn't come as a shock, but it was just like another. At the time, I guess it's just another little checkbox of the declining nature of Evanston. So it wasn't, it was just another thing, you know, with 71 coming through, it was just another thing that was lost. And so it ran as a food pantry for a few years, but then they eventually closed that down.
And tell us a little bit about what it's like to fight to save a building that, as you say, is in disrepair, that has been inhabited, I suppose, by people experiencing homelessness, but without like a sanctioned place for that type of activity, a hole in the roof. Why fight to save it?
Have you seen St. Mark's?
Yeah.
it's a no-brainer on this one. I mean, it is literally a good fight to fight. When I first moved here about 2 years ago, I drove down my street. I live on Woodburn, and I saw this magnificent building, and I found out that it was empty and they had no plans to do anything with it. And I've been fortunate. I lived in Europe for 17 years where churches like this are all over the place, and literally they would never even think of knocking it down. So I don't know why we are thinking of knocking it down. So I found out that there were a group of resident neighbors who wanted to save it. And so I joined that group, and we've been fighting for 2 years to bring it back. And we were very fortunate that about half the neighbors were in skill sets that we really needed. Like I'm a photographer, another person is a photographer, so we could take some media shots of inside, outside. One's an architect, one was a member of a preservation board. So we had a lot of skill sets resident in the neighborhood to help us do this. And so we've come up with an amazing plan of how we want to renovate it, what we're going to do with it. It's been a labor of love, but it was an easy fight to join, because every time you drive by, you just kind of pause and look at such a magnificent structure.
I do want to discuss some of those plans or hopes that you have for the property, but when you talk about why would anyone want to knock it down, I certainly can't answer that, but someone apparently can, because we're talking about a contract for purchase that was entered into back in July of this year, involving the Church of the Resurrection and Kingsley Realty Investments. And there was a demo permit awarded for this. It was signed on September 14th, according to reporting from WXIX. And so when you get word of that, how concerned were you?
I'm just finding out from you that it was done in July. We didn't get word of it until probably a month ago. No one told us about it. The last we, in our contact with the church, were up until April. We had sent them a letter of intent. They agreed. We had an agreed upon price. We were just basically doing the details of it. Just little things like that, about like some of the stained glass inside and things like that. But as far as we knew, we had a deal, and it was just down to the little bits. And then we heard nothing, literally nothing. No matter how many times we called or sent letters, we got no responses. And then about a month ago, we found out that it was under contract. And then a few days after that, it was a demolition order. So then we started scrambling and gathering our troops, if you will, to lobby the historic board to make it a landmark designation. And thankfully, it was successful last week. And so now, because of that, it still can be demolished, but it's going to be much, much harder for them to do that. Your other guests can probably correct me on that one. They would have to have a really compelling reason to demolish it, or basically find no other use for it, which, of course, there is another use for it. So even though we still don't own the church, now that we know that it's not going to be demolished, that does help our cause a little bit more.
And that's J.R. Gentle, Save the Mark Board Vice Chairman. And Paul Muller is the Executive Director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association, which worked on that that effort to find a landmark status for St. Mark's. And Paul, what is that process like? You talked about putting together all of these materials, but what type of research is necessary for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to become a landmark in Cincinnati, it has to have significance in one of several categories. And this one cut across many of those. The architect for it was Henry Schlacks, who's founded the architectural school at Notre Dame. And he was a Chicago architect that did these type of churches around the Midwest. The Historic Conservation Board had to look at, you know, the history of the building, its role in the neighborhood, and they voted unanimously to advance the landmark designation to the City Planning Commission. That's the next step. And then if the City Planning Commission approves it, it will go to City Council. It was interesting, the board chair at the time when they were voting said, if we don't have our historic conservation laws to protect something like this, why do we have them? A clear case of using the historic conservation laws to bring a greater value to the community forward. Sometimes the short-term economic benefits can destroy things that have much greater value to a city. And that's the way the law is written, and that's the way they applied it.
Okay, well, Paul, I want to know, because JR said that these developers who have entered into a contract to purchase this can still tear it down, but it makes it harder. So are we not out of the woods, those who might want to keep this church intact?
We're not out of the woods, but I think there's some pretty good signs out there. First of all, the landmark designation started before the demolition permit was applied for, so it will take precedent, which that's very important. That came up with the Gamble House years ago. But if it gets the landmark designation, then for the owner to tear it down, they would have to show that it was an economic hardship, that there was no other economically viable use for it. And at the hearing, it came out that someone has made a backup offer to purchase it at the same price. I don't know any of the details of that, but it was Tom Fernandez, an architect, who would work with the Mark and bring some concepts that he has for the site in line with what the Mark is trying to do. So if the landmark designation goes forward and the demolition is denied, there's definitely a bright future for St. Mark.
We'll talk about what that future might entail coming up, but I want to turn back to Bill Parrish, the executive director of the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center in Glendale. This is a property that was, I guess, the Cincinnati Preservation Association has entered into an agreement to purchase this with 42 Washington Avenue LLC, which is the current owner. And Bill, talk a little bit about when you got word that this was going to happen. You have worked for years to find a sturdier future for this building.
That's a good question. I think it's somewhat of a complex system that we kind of went through to get to this point where we realized that it was actually going to be, at least a major part of this was going to be demolished. I can't really tell you exactly when. I can say that once we realized that, for me, the first thing that came to mind was all the work that we had done that necessarily didn't have anything to do with the building per se, was just the history, which, you know, for me today, I really want to address preservation from the standpoint of the history behind the structure. And I think for me, that was really important because it included more than just a black school that we were trying to save. It was really much more about this history behind the Eckstein School. And that went all the way back to 1830 when the Ecksteins came to Cincinnati. Frederick Eckstein, who was considered the father of Cincinnati art, established himself in Glendale. So, you know, and Francis Eckstein and Eleanor, they were teachers. So they had come through the Underground Railroad from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, across West Virginia, planning schools, and this education for Black kids. And then they suddenly landed in Glendale, which was a central station for the Underground Railroad. So imagine, you know, that history. And then it leads up to the fact that Glendale actually supported the idea of the building the school. The other aspect of that was another family that got in this, which was the Verdon family. You may know them.
Oh, the Bell people?
Cincinnati. The Bell people. They were, and they're the original structure, which is what the village had planned to tear down that structure. But they were the ones who were responsible for giving that structure to, or allowing John Birchenough to purchase that for $1. And that's the original structure. So this, all of this history before you get to Eckstein School is really significant, and which led me to go through the process of getting it pre-registered on the National Register. So I think I don't want to get caught up in, you know, the demolition and all that, but I think the history is the part that I really was focusing on, because I felt that if the building gets torn down, at least we've got documentation of not only where this all originated, but this compelling story that surrounds the Underground Railroad. So we get to the point where maybe, I'm not sure whether the village realized it or not, or whether it was really just not significant. I think they were on this path of, we're going to tear this thing down and we're going to go ahead and do what it is we're planning to do. So I think it got to the point where I realized that that was really going to happen. And so my attorney put me on to Paul. And I think that's where we saw this real turn start to take place, because Cincinnati now was involved. We're a village. So I think in a village, you have your own structure. You have your own way, you know, of how you handle the business of the village. It's self-sufficient in that. So you can do certain things. But I think we're a national historic village. I mean, we're the only planned community in the state of Ohio, and maybe even in the entire country. So preservation is who we are. And that's the part I think that really took me by storm, was when I realized that we had other structures in the village that were African-American centric that were torn down. And now I saw this on the path of this happening, in spite of the argument, in spite of the history, in spite of it being the path of being it getting it on the National Register, the National Park Service accepting it. And so that's sort of the big picture of how we got to this point, was there was a lot of history that we have on it that includes more than African Americans. And I really want to make that point, because I think that sometimes we can focus on one group of people and lose sight of, oh, this was really a movement that came about with the Underground Railroad.
Well, I wonder, because we know the history is important, but what does this mean for the future?
Well, I think it means for us, I mean, we imagine, I mean, in 2016, we had this vision and plan, business plan, how the preliminary architectural drawings, the three-phase process of what it was going to cost, the $40,000 to do the work, the EPA work. And we had done all of that. So we were positioned not just with an idea, we had a whole plan in place. The Eckstein Cultural Arts came about because we were pretty well feeling good that we were going to get the building. So we went through this process understanding that we were going to get the building for $1. And then we were going to, you know, that this wasn't going to be a big deal. So I think that that aspect of it became really important when that situation changed suddenly in August 2018. And all of a sudden, the building's in the hands, you know, with a realty company that did get it. And then suddenly, we don't hear anything about it. And so then in December, 4 months later, I hear that it's in the hands of Denny Dowinger, and that, and so we're wondering, okay, well, why if M&L Realty didn't want it, or they decided to default or whatever they did, why didn't it come back to us? Because it was only M&L Realty and the Eckstein Cultural Arts Center who were bidders on it in the first place. And we were going to partner originally. We were going to partner with M&L Realty. So I think that sent somewhat of a bad signal to us, maybe how the village felt about the building. It was more obvious now that, okay, where is this going? So then 2 years later, we're still wondering because nothing's being done with the building. And with, in our plan, we 2 years later, it was going to be completely done. We wouldn't even be having this conversation today. But then I went back to council in December of 2020, and I was like, okay, it's been over 2 years now. What's the deal with Eckstein, the school? And then I think that's where the pressure came for Denny to actually do something. And now, you know, they had kind of with the plan of the convalescent home and all of that. And so we were just quietly waiting to see how this was going to go. We were still going to fight, though, for the history and the preservation of this amazing Mission Revival style.
Well, I want to touch a bit on that, yeah, because we just got a few minutes left, and I want to get back to St. Mark's also before we have to wrap up. But Paul Muller is the executive director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association, which announced that it had entered into an agreement for the purchase of the Eckstein School. Now, Paul, I imagine there are a lot of properties that the Preservation Association expresses interest in or fights for, but is it often that you all get so involved as to enter into a purchase agreement?
Not until recently. We did one in Batavia. We bought an 1833 Greek Revival house that was under demolition orders. We have that for sale now. And if there's a historic minded owner out there, just look it up. But the Eckstein School is just phenomenally important. We have not stepped in and purchased a building of that significance since probably when we moved our offices to Memorial Hall back in the 80s to help save that. But Eckstein has so many layers of the story of race in America. It's not an accident that there is a large African-American community in Glendale. That dates all the way back to pre-Civil War times when the abolitionists were helping, as Bill said. The building itself was in operation from 1915 to 1958 as a segregated public school. You know, if you talk about structural racism in America, we have a structure of racism in America. The Ohio Historic Office thinks it's a very important site for telling the story of how race intersected with both education and community planning. So we're excited about it. I think you can tell that. And preservation hasn't done a lot in relation to sites of Black history. We recognize this. We got a grant from the Hale Foundation and the Greater Cincinnati Foundation to create a program on sites of Black history. And when I went out to these hearings in Glendale, Bill was able to marshal like 30 people, many of them alumnus of Eckstein, come up and say, it wasn't just a school. It was the heart of the community. Because in an era of segregation, there weren't other places for many of the things that need to happen. And it was really moving. And this is just what preservation can do when it's working well. Connect to people's lives, to large thematic events that have happened, and to give a way to talk about them. And Bill does these racial reconciliation meetings with his Eckstein Center. They're going to have arts, and they're going to have music. It's going to be a very lively facility. And we haven't even talked about the architecture of it. It was by Stanley Matthews, who is a very important Glendale architect, who's, I think it was his grandfather, was Supreme Court Justice. But he designed the addition in 1928 to the school.
Well, another architectural gem whose future is uncertain but may appear to be a little bit safer is the St. Mark Catholic Church in Evanston, and J.R. Gentle is the Save the Mark Board Vice Chairman. We talked a bit about the past of this building, and now we know that it might have a future that's more in line with what you and your organization hopes for. But JR, what does that future look like if you get what you hope for?
Well, first off, we have to purchase the building. That's the first hurdle. It's not totally clear whether the landmark, it's not totally over that the landmark designation is set in stone, because it has to go before the planning committee and the city council. From all indications, it should go through both of those fairly easy. But, you know, Cincinnati, so you never know what can happen. Once we do that, then we then have to re-engage with the church to hopefully purchase the property. It was something we spoke earlier about, Mr. Fernandez, who had put in an offer. We're actually talking with him. So if he does end up buying it, it will be in conjunction with the Save the Mark Board. It's not like he's trying to outbuy it from us or anything. We've all been talking, we've had meetings. So hopefully we'll get the church, even though I really think the church should just give it to us for a dollar, honestly.
That's J.R. Like, Gentle.
I'm just going to throw that out there. They should just give it to us for $1. There is absolutely no reason. They let it sit there empty for so many years. Everything we want to do, we had a meeting with the church earlier in the year, and everything we wanted to do, what we want to do with the church, is in line with what they want it to be used for. We want to put a permanent food bank in there. There'll be, it'll be a nonprofit hub. It'll be a concert space. It'll be a conference space. It will bring a lot of much needed funds and financing to the community. There'll be create jobs. I mean, everything about it is positive for Evanston and for Cincinnati, by the way, because if you drive up 71, there's just this big thing that just sits there doing nothing. You know, it could be, you know, it is an icon for Cincinnati, but nobody knows about it because it's just dark and empty. It's like a tombstone to what used to be there. We want to turn it into a monument, what can be.
Well, we will continue to watch, and we'll get an update on this, I imagine, soon. That's J.R. Gentle, Save the Mark Board Vice Chairman. We've also been joined by Bill Parrish, the Executive Director of Eckstein Cultural Arts Center, and Paul Muller, the Executive Director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association. Paul, Bill, J.R., thank you for the time today.
No worries. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.